Welcome to Season 3 of E-Commerce Fastlane, Episode 123.
Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, launch, grow, and scale a wildly successful e-commerce company. Listen to real conversations with proven practical strategies and success stories. Learn how to generate more traffic, more sales, more profit, and customer lifetime value for your Shopify store. And now, your host and e-commerce entrepreneur, Steve Hutt.
This episode is brought to you by Grin, the number one influencer marketing software solution that's built for direct-to-consumer brands on Shopify. They're an all-in-one relationship management platform that helps you cultivate an authentic influencer network and a more valuable brand. From discovery and outreach to campaign management, Grin streamlines your workflow, removing the busy work while giving you the tools to help you grow and scale your program. From influencer recruitment, communication, product seeding, discount codes and affiliate links, including content and rights management, sales and tracking, and influencer payments, Grin helps you do it all. Smart brands truly understand that creating an emotional connection with your consumer drives up lifetime value, because what you end up doing is building a stronger brand. You create diehard fans who come back and purchase from you again and again. Get started today with Grin and make the most of your influencer marketing program with the all-in-one platform that's designed to help you build more authentic, brand-boosting relationships. So go check them out at grin.co. Well, hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. New episodes are available each week with your favorite podcast player through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Or you can also sign up online at ecommercefastlane.com and be notified when a new show is being released. Now, my guest in today's episode is Brian Gold, who's the co-founder and CEO from a company called Hashtag Paid. And they're a creator marketing platform that helps Shopify brands to grow faster with creators. And notice the language I'm using, creators. It's an interesting language. It's not what you believe it is. And it's an important and, I believe, timely conversation, because unlike influencers, which is a very hot topic, creators, from what I understand, I'm sure we're going to learn more from Brian today, but they really are there to build awareness with the right audience, drive return on ad spend, and you know, at the end of the day, really to greatly assist with customer lifetime loyalty for your Shopify brand. So let's jump in and learn more. So hi, Brian. Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Honored to be here.
So I shared it a little bit at the top of the show, more of an overview of what I believe Hashtag Paid is actually doing, but I believe it's always best from the founder's perspective. So what does your company do, and what sort of problems, I'm going to call it problems, that are you solving for Shopify brands?
Hashtag Paid allows brands to grow quickly by working with creators. That's the simplest way to put it. So Shopify merchants are probably thinking about influencer marketing as a growth tactic, different ways to scale their sales, grow customers, increase repeat purchases from customers. But when you take a look at the world of influencer marketing, there's one big problem that stands out. And the biggest problem in the world of influencer marketing is trust. Marketers, store owners, they don't necessarily trust influencers in terms of, are their followers real? Do they actually care about the brands that they're promoting? Do their followers even trust them and believe in what they're posting about? So it's like the first main pillar of trust. And the second pillar of trust would be, they don't really trust the metrics. So, you know, you can get 500 likes, 1,000 likes, 20 comments. You can see how much it costs you per like, per comment, but those metrics don't necessarily drive your business forward. So at Hashtag Paid, we're really focused on solving the problem of trust, and we do it by working with creators, not influencers, and reporting on real metrics, not fluffy metrics.
So let's unpack that a little bit. I mean, you know, you mentioned working with creators, not influencers, like, you know, and I'm slowly starting to warm up to that concept, because I've interviewed other platforms that really talk about just their influencers, their micro influencers, macro influencers. These, it seems to be like a very interestingly hot topic, this user-generated content sort of thing. And I'm worried that maybe some may feel it's just semantics a bit, creator versus influencer, but I really would love to hear it from you, like more specifically about like what is the real difference between, as you believe, a creator versus an influencer?
So to start, creators treat their work like a craft. They probably accidentally became famous online because they were owning their craft and they built an audience organically. Whereas an influencer is someone who's looking to make a quick buck. Second, creators are proud of their collaborations. So they only work with brands that are natural, authentic extensions of who they are, that they know their audience is going to resonate with. Whereas an influencer, you know, they'll work with anybody because they're just looking to make money. And in fact, after you pay them, they're going to delete it from their feed. Third, creators love creating original content. They know how to engage their target audience and that brand's target audience potentially even better than the brand does. Whereas an influencer, they're happy just to repost content, you know, give them the picture, give them the caption, they'll post it, they'll delete it after. And then lastly, creators work really hard growing a organic and trusted audience online, a real community of people that look up to them and respect them. Whereas an influencer, they're taking the shortcut. They're probably buying fake followers. Nowadays, it's super easy to spend a few $100 online and get a bunch of robots following you and liking your stuff.
Yeah, I've always wondered about that when I see certain people with like limited content, but so much followership, it just seems really almost disingenuous and you know something shady is going on.
Totally. And if you're a brand looking to collaborate with popular social media people, then you know, it's really important to make sure that when you collaborate with them, you're actually reaching real people. Otherwise, you're just wasting your money.
So Brian, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your journey, I guess, leading up to the launch of Hashtag Paid. And like, what do you believe uniquely positions you and your co-founder, I guess, on a couple points? Number one, to have the desire, and number two, to have the expertise to want to create this platform.
My co-founder and I grew up with a good friend of ours named Ronnie, and Ronnie was going through a difficult time in her life. She wasn't feeling her best because she wasn't exercising as much as she'd like to. She wasn't eating as healthy as she wanted to, and her therapist recommended that she start blogging about her fitness goals to keep herself accountable to the public. And she did just that. The latest blog at the time is about 2013, 2014. Instagram, that was the thing. So she started an Instagram account called Inspired to Be Fit, and she changed her life around. She started eating healthy and sharing recipes, working out and sharing exercise tips. And she grew to 100,000 followers in like 6 months, maybe 12 months. Her followers wanted to know, you know, what protein powder was she using? What blender was she using? And it was pretty obvious that her followers would buy anything that she said she used in order to get fit. But we went to the 50th page of Google and nothing existed to help Ronnie connect with brands. So we set out to create the easiest way for these brands to tap into creators like Ronnie to scale. And now we have over 30,000 of these creators and the workflow tools built to help brands tap into these creators, collaborate with them, and drive growth. And to bring it full circle, Ronnie is still a content creator, and she actually has also been working at Shopify now for over 3 years.
Well, there you go. So this is, I'm for sure going to ping her internally and have a chat with her after this recording. This is fantastic. I had no idea. I want to talk a little bit about the other influencer platforms that are out there. I think, you know, of the brands that I talk to, people pinging me left, right all the time in social, just asking me about just influencer marketing in general and kind of, you know, based on their maturity or their complexity, there's certain tools and things that they may want to consider. And so, you know, you're in the midst of this sort of, you know, I don't want to keep bunching the names of creator and influencer together because it's clear that it's not. But there are platforms out there. How do you believe that you're kind of differentiating yourself in this space?
For sure. So if you take a look at the creator economy, there's all kinds of different tools out there to help creators monetize their audience online. But the subsection of the creator economy, the brand partnerships platforms, which, you know, a lot of people are would call influencer marketing platforms, these are the ones that will really help marketers and brands grow online, grow their sales, grow their brand awareness. So if you take a look at the influencer marketing platforms out there, it's a really fragmented space. I mean, you've got a bunch of different people solving different problems, right? There's companies like Upfluence, and you can use that for search tools. So, you know, there's a bunch of search tools out there. Usually what they do is they aggregate a bunch of accounts, social media profiles with large followers, put it into a database, and it's a pretty robust, you know, search tool. You can search and find the right people. There's certain CRMs out there that, you know, if you find the right people you want to work with, you can upload them to your CRM and you can execute your campaign through their workflow tools from A to Z. There's analytic platforms out there. There's, you know, some out there just for content. There's some, you know, just for whitelisting, which we'll get into in a bit. That's one of the best kept secrets in paid social. And so at Hashtag Paid, our core insight was that brands want to go from I want to work with creators to that creator just drove meaningful results for my business as quick as possible. And so what we did is we vertically integrated the entire brand partnership set into one stack. So you can launch your campaign, work with creators, track all of your content, track all of your results, and see sales growth all with one tool set.
Because typically, I notice that most of the platforms that I've looked at, there's typically, you know, a marketplace, exactly what you said, maybe what Upfluence is doing or others, where there's an aggregated marketplace and some search functionality. And, you know, maybe a Shopify brand could choose to work with one of these just by looking at vanity metrics only. But when I look at Hashtag Paid, I understand that there is not a search tool like natively built into the platform. Like, is this a real intentionality of the design of the platform?
It's been a deeply held belief of ours that you don't necessarily need a search tool in order to get the job done. So what's the big problem here? It's that, you know, brands find it hard to find the right creators to work with. And so the typical solution is, okay, let's build a search. But I actually don't think it's a search problem. It's a user experience problem. So the Hashtag Paid platform doesn't have search. What you do is, and we call this hand raise, you fill out a creator brief. So a little bit about your brand, your target audience, the types of creators you're interested in. And then you get matched with creators who over-index in that target audience, who are interested in working with you, who are a good fit. And before you select them, you can hear from them why they think they're a good fit and what their ideas are. So you can maintain authenticity while you scale.
Very cool. Very cool. So it's called hand raising.
Hand raise, yeah. And you can see your hand raised creators.
I'm going to dig a little deeper into maybe some of the specifics here about maybe trying to find the right creators. And because I believe that, and you've mentioned already, that authenticity is so critical for the success of a campaign and building a relationship with a creator that's like passionate about the product and not going to delete posts and things after they get paid. It's not just strictly a monetary, they do want to get paid, but they also are trying to build a long-term relationship as your product mix expands or you get involved in more opportunities. And so I hear things a lot about maybe saturation rate as a metric, you know, for maintaining this authenticity. Like, I guess it can be defined a little bit by how many sponsored posts you have versus non-sponsored posts that maybe that creator is sharing. My wife even notices that even recently where she's following a few people on Instagram and, you know, she does end up either blocking or pausing some accounts because the ratio of sponsored versus just authentic kind of here's what's going on in my life kind of posts tend to outweigh each other or they get annoying. And so she tends to kind of pause or delete these sort of people. And so are you able to share maybe your insights around how you think about this now?
Frequency of sponsored posts is definitely something to look at, right? If someone's constantly posting sponsored posts and doesn't seem to fit in their feed, it's like, hey, what happened to that lifestyle content? All of a sudden, you know, you're turning into a catalog. It can be a little bit jarring for the audience, but I think there are a few things to look at that's more important than the what you call saturation rate or frequency. I mean, especially because the new generation, the way that they learn about brands is through creators, and they've fully accepted that that's part of the ecosystem and they've come to expect it. And so, you know, there's, you know, certain fashion creators that you follow because you want to know what they're wearing. You want to know what's in style. You want to know what's cool. You know, which brand did my favorite creator partner with this week or today? So there are definitely some accounts where you're seeking out certain brands because buying that brand allows you to live the lifestyle of your favorite creator you follow. So what's, I think, more important than saturation is the match. Is it an authentic match? There are some ways where you can post about something and your followers will completely reject it. They'll say, you know, what are you doing posting about this? It's obviously nothing you've ever said that you've believed in before. It can really throw people off. But on the other hand, if you are positioning it in a way that makes your audience proud of you for securing a brand partnership with one of your favorite brands, then they're going to congratulate you, they're going to respect you, and they're going to respect and look more into that brand. So it's really about how it's positioned and the authenticity. When you work with creators, not influencers, of course, being authentic is a huge part of that, but also you have to avoid forcefulness. So a big problem with the ecosystem right now in terms of authenticity is you see the emergence of boutique talent agencies that maybe have signed, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 creators or influencers. They've signed them, so they have them exclusively, and now they're going out and they're pitching brands. And so, and sometimes brands go to them, but the problem there is, you know, when you've got, let's say a brand comes to you wanting to run a 20K campaign with your creators, you only have a handful of people to work with. So you don't really get the ability to find the best people in the world. You're only able to choose from the ones you have. And then even so, you're going to push their hand a little bit and nudge them to take the deal because that's your livelihood on the line. So I think that's where there can be a breakdown of authenticity and trust. So being able to work with a large pool that you can surface the most authentic creators to the top is the best way to actually create collaborations that'll have audiences going, yes, amazing, I want to find out more about that brand. So another interesting thing that we do is we'll actually survey our creator network. So we are working with an alcohol company, and they have a bunch of different beer lines. So we would then put a survey to our creator network out of these 50 beers, which one is your favorite? And only the one that chose that one specific beer that the campaign was about did we then put forward in the hand raise process to the brand.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's great. So let's dig into some of the tactics, I think, because there's so many ways that I think a Shopify brand can get involved with a creator. And what do you believe is the best way that they should start working with a creator, like let's say right now, to grow their business?
For sure. I think every single consumer brand out there today needs to be thinking about creators and as a core part of their marketing and branding strategy. And if not, they're probably going to get left behind, because even $100 can, and of course, you're probably at that point not necessarily buying software, you might be reaching out to creators yourself. But even with $100, the value that a creator can provide is probably going to give you a better ROI than any of the traditional legacy systems in place. I mean, you have creative agencies and media agencies, and they've been super relevant in terms of all traditional media forms. They're always going to have their place in this world, even though they're changing. But you can leverage creators now to create and distribute content in a completely different way, where you don't see a silo between creative and media, and it's much more cost effective. So to start, when you, let's say you launch your e-commerce store and you want to make it look cool, you just want to brand yourself. Well, what better way to make it look cool with your target audience than the people that are experts at engaging with and touching the heart of your target audience? You know, so content creators, even if they have 25,000 followers, 50,000 followers, they're posting multiple times a week, constantly tweaking their content, their messaging, looking at their metrics. They understand what content resonates. And so when you're able to give them, let's say, your t-shirt or your hat or your sweater, they can brand it in a way that is, one, completely up to date with what people expect today and now from a brand, from an image, from that lifestyle. And two, it's going to be much more cost effective than if you were to go through a different route of getting that content created. And you can do that at scale pretty easily. You can take that content, you can put it right on your website, you can put it on your social media, and you can create a lifestyle around your brand. And that's key. And not a lot of founders think about brand so much. They think more about, hey, how can I just, you know, take my marketing spend and use it to drive sales directly? But I think brand is actually a key part of that, because the better your brand, the higher the efficacy of your other marketing dollars. You're just going to convert more people. You're going to have a happier customer, because when you're able to create a brand by tapping into creators in this lifestyle, then people who buy your products, they'll feel a certain way about themselves when they're wearing, you know, that t-shirt or that hat. So I think it's a really important and sometimes understated component of your marketing plan. So first is just the content. It's just going to elevate your brand. These are people at the forefront of culture. They know what's cool. They know what's trending. And getting them to create content and putting that on your social, on your website, it'll just elevate your brand. The second is you can have them share it with their audience. And that's really going to help you build awareness, grow your audience. People are going to follow you more on your Instagram. Now you're going to have a little bit more social proof. You're going to start growing your community of people. And maybe they haven't purchased from you yet, but you just acquired a way to reach them over time. And then the third, which is the best kept secret in paid social, is what we call whitelisting. And so whitelisting is when you take a creator's content, their picture, their handle, their caption, and you leverage all of the targeting capabilities of Facebook's ad manager to reach more people than they would reach if they just organically posted it, and a more targeted approach, and you can drive sales and you can have return on ad spend. We have some of our customers where they're seeing the best return on ad spend that they've ever seen on paid social, 20, 25, 30% better than if just regular paid social with their own content through their own handle. So yeah, the nuance there is that you're scrolling through your feed and you see an ad instead of from a brand, you see the ad from a creator. And there's all different kinds of strategies you can do there. You can even do a retargeting campaign, a repeat to drive repeat purchases using the creator's caption handle. And it's a much more authentic way to reach people, and people respond to it better. Facebook actually just released a study saying that people actually prefer ads from creators over brands, and it's much more effective.
That's very cool. And I'm also thinking about the user-generated content and the repurposing factor. Is that what we're kind of talking about here too as a potential tactic? Is that sometimes the end consumer, maybe through some kind of a review tool of some sort, is publishing things on the product details pages, and then you get, you know, the rights to be able to reuse that content. But then on the creator side, when you hire a creator to do a particular campaign and they get paid, do those digital assets, regardless of where they're being broadcast, if they're on his or her own social or on your own social, or as you're saying, even through Facebook and kind of expanding upon that, are you suggesting that's where the market is today, is that once you build a relationship with a creator, those assets belong to the brand that hired the creator, and how they want to repurpose those to build even a wider audience?
I think a smart marketer is taking those assets and using them everywhere they can. But it is important to make sure that as part of your agreement with the creator you're collaborating with, you discuss ownership over content. Because if you're, you know, if the creator thinks that they're just posting it and then all of a sudden you're putting it on a billboard in Times Square, I mean, they're going to get pretty upset that you're using their likeness and not paying them. So negotiating the contract and the rights and the usage is an important part. And so if you're just reaching out directly, make sure that you have that covered, or, you know, use a platform that automates that for you.
So Brian, this show has a diverse range of Shopify entrepreneurs that listen each week. And, you know, you're in a very unique vantage point because you're dealing with creators and you know the brands that they're working with, and you're seeing the success based on these relationships. So from your vantage point, like, what advice would you give these brands today, you know, and store owners that are very eager to grow and scale?
It's an interesting question, because I hear, you know, eager to grow and scale. And first I think, okay, let's understand what you mean by grow and scale, because there's a lot of store owners that are really attracted to venture funding. They want to finance their business through VC dollars, but they're not 100% sure on what their goals are. So yeah, I mean, first it's the framework is, you know, are you trying to build the next category defining brand? Are you looking to 10x your business from where you're at now? Or are you looking to just make a living owning your craft and doing what you love and you're happy with that? Because, you know, on one side, you can chase growth, you can fund the business, you can operate with negative EBITDA in the short term to try to gain market share and build your brand. But, you know, that's one very specific path. And, you know, if you're just looking to be able to make a salary from your own Shopify store, then you don't necessarily need to be chasing growth, as growth has sort of been glorified so much in the media. So I see a lot of entrepreneurs who didn't actually take a step back and think about what do they want. You know, they might say they want VC funding, but they haven't necessarily taken a step back and thought about it, because the economics of a VC fund, you know, they need to 10x, it might not necessarily be right for you. And the lifestyle as well that's demanded of entrepreneurs it's not as glorious as it appears on the outside. It's a lot of work. It's blood, sweat, and tears. And on the other side of it, hopefully you've made a big impact on the world, but that might not be right for you. So, you know, that's an important thing to consider. In terms of specific growth tactics, we have a podcast called D2C Growth, where we interview successful direct-to-consumer founders that have scaled their business. And we talk about the tips and tricks they've used, their story, their founding story along the way, roadblocks. There's tons of great knowledge in there. And then we also just launched an audio community on an app called Chalk. And it's a really cool community. It's some really awesome, intimate conversations happening there where people are learning from each other. And it's called D2C Growth as well. And you can find and join the community if you go to bit.ly/DTC Growth.
I'll make sure I have all of those in the show notes. I will add a small thing too, is that I totally agree with what you're saying about what does growth and scale actually mean, you know, for a particular founder of a direct-to-consumer brand, because you're right. Some that are bootstrapped with their own cash and they're kind of putting their own money into it, they really do want a lifestyle business. Like, I manage a few brands that literally that's all they want. They want slow 5% growth per year, maybe 10, but they have a very small team. They have a lot of outsourcers doing a lot of stuff in the Philippines. They have a 3PL for fulfillment. They outsource one partner or two for a little bit of their SMS and just their marketing automation side of it. Influencers, creators are a next thing on their radar. So this is a very timely episode. So it's like, that's the lifestyle business side of it. But then on the flip side, I also have brands that are 50 million, 80, almost $150 million. One brand that I'm looking after, they're heavily VC funded. They have a portfolio of brands that they manage. They're very, very particular. There's a lot of other stresses that go along. It's not just getting, you know, your big six-figure salary as being a VP of a D2C startup. There's a lot of other things when you start taking on VC money. There's a lot of expectations about, as you're talking, the 10X growth, and then being accountable. And there's a lot of other stresses that go along with that. And if that's the journey you want to go down and be a market defining a product mix, and you want to make massive impact, then you go down that journey, and that's fair. But for those listening today, that I think that's some really great takeaways. There's two different types of entrepreneurs in this world and the things that they're building today.
Totally. And I'm not sure why. I'm not saying one is necessarily better than the other. I think they're both righteous paths, but I'm not sure why there isn't more media attention, or at least more positive sentiment towards founders that are just growing 5% year over year, doing $150,000, $200,000 in sales and taking home a healthy salary. That's an incredible, successful business. And I think that should be looked at, and we should hold that in higher regard, should be looked at as something a little bit more positive than is typically portrayed in the media today.
So one other thing that I wanted to mention too was there was a book that came out from an author, Paul Jarvis. I'll have the link in the show notes, but his book was called The Company of One, and it's, you know, why staying small is the next thing for business. I think it was brought out last year, I think in 2019, maybe, so a couple of years ago. But the big thing he talks about in there is that there are ways of having a fulfilling and rich career with, like, literally just you and maybe a few outsourcers, and, you know, and you get that lifestyle business built into it. Like you said, you could be working and having $250,000 a year in sales. That could be quite a healthy, nice salary for you. I mean, it really determines, you know, it really decides on how you want to run your business and what you want. So what's your take on that then? So there's this company of one kind of concept, and then there's this, I want to build this large, massive organization, and I'm okay to hustle 60 hours a week to make it happen.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I'm happy you brought that up, because there's really two different paths you can go on, and I think both of them are equally as righteous. It's just the key is to be mindful of which one is right for you. There's a lot of entrepreneurs that, you know, come to me, hey, I need help. I want to raise VC funding. But when you take a look at what their goals are and you take a step back, they might not necessarily be the right business to raise VC funding. And that might not even be the lifestyle that they want. It might not be something that's in their best interest, because if you go down the VC route, you've got to 10X your business. You've got to scale the team, grow really fast. And one, that's a certain lifestyle that's not for everybody. And two, you're probably going to get pushed to go big or bust. And it's not really something that is for everybody. So it's really important to take a step back and think about, okay, what's my end goal here? What am I really trying to achieve? Because it's perfectly okay to go down the route of building a lifestyle business that does 200K a year, and you can take home a nice salary, and you're doing something you love, and you're focusing on your craft. I think that's an incredible outcome, and I'm not sure why that doesn't get a more positive sentiment in the media these days. That's a perfectly incredible option for entrepreneurs to go down. And so it's important to think about what's the best path for me. And just going off of Paul Jarvis's book, A Company of One there, it's a really good question, right? He says, what is the best way to have the most fulfilling career? And so, you know, what are you optimizing for? Some people are only going to be fulfilled when they make a big impact and build a category defining company, and that's okay. But other people might want to optimize for things like work-life balance, for things like being happy with what they have and perfecting, you know, they might not live in a huge mansion, but they're really happy with the size of home that they're in. And they just want everything to get in a good routine and maybe, you know, now have a at-home gym. And like, that's totally incredible. I mean, you're so successful just building a lifestyle business like that, that's growing 5% year over year. So I guess the key takeaway here is to be mindful of what kind of company you're building rather than just chase growth at all costs. Take a step back and ask yourself what your goal is and what kind of outcome you want, and then optimize towards that. Because you can fund the business in other ways that it's not venture capital that allow you to grow a meaningful lifestyle business. Or you can go down the venture capital route, but that comes with the next commitment to spend many years, long nights, working so hard, constantly pushing yourself to grow faster. And that's one, not for every entrepreneur, and two, not for every product.
Yeah, got it. Thanks for sharing that. So let's talk about the future of Hashtag Paid, because I'm always curious about maybe the North Stars for brands, like why, and just the product and the innovation that comes along with the product and the platform. So are you able to share how you believe it's going to pivot over the next few years? And just end of the day, I'm just trying to get warm and fuzzy about how you're going to continue to offer, I guess, value and assistance for Shopify brands that need creators.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, our North Star is customer success and customer value. Sales and growth is a byproduct of creating customer value. So whether it's new plans, new features, new channels, new ways to collaborate to drive growth, it's all about the customer and what they want. So yeah, we'll just be heads down focused on creating customer value. One really interesting thing that I can share is we're starting to think about ways to integrate the Hashtag Paid creator collaboration experience into Instagram and Shopify directly. So you can imagine a consumer seeing a creator post about a brand, and you know, Shopify and Instagram have a really interesting partnership where you can purchase something from Instagram directly. Imagine seeing a creator post about something and then tapping it and purchasing it in Instagram powered by Shopify. I think that's really cool. And when you talk about making commerce better for everyone, I mean, that's it.
So Brian, we are nearing the end of the show for today, but do you have any takeaways or maybe a theme that you would like to leave with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, all this stuff aside, at the end of the day, building a great company is all about the people you bring onto your team and the environment you create for them. At Hashtag Paid, I'm constantly firing myself and hiring people smarter than me. And when you take a look at where we're at today, it's all about the people at Hashtag Paid that made this happen. And so if you're looking to win at business, raise your bar for talent, hire the best people, people smarter than you, and give them an environment where they can thrive and they'll be successful.
So how can people learn more about Hashtag Paid?
Yeah, just go to hashtagpaid.com.
That's HASHTAGPAID. So all three words, hashtagpaid.com. Even though a lot of times we actually use the name, I noticed in your logo with the actual hashtag symbol paid, all in lowercase, but this is going to be the full name. So it's perfect. We also did speak offline. I understand that you would like to offer almost like a listener only promotion for those that have listened in today.
Yeah, for the Shopify merchants out there looking to drive growth with creators, we're happy to offer $500 worth of assets towards your brand on your next campaign.
Perfect. So what we'll do is it'll be set up at ecommercefastlane.com/#paid. And that's going to redirect you to a landing page. And on that landing page, we'll have the offer, just some of the details and stuff, some particulars, and then an easy way to sign up and take Brian up and his team up on that offer. So that's amazing. Thank you so much for that amazing and generous offer. You know, and as you know, Shopify's mission really is to make commerce better for everyone. And, you know, it's very clear to me based on this conversation that, you know, both you and the #pay team really are in tight alignment with wanting to help Shopify brands to improve efficiency, certainly helping join up creators to brands, which eventually helps to grow revenue and builds this lifetime loyalty. And just want to take, you know, this moment to thank you for coming on the show, sharing your knowledge and your vision and just giving back to the Shopify ecosystem.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Steve, and congrats on all the great work you're doing collecting this knowledge and helping other entrepreneurs succeed. It's something I'm super passionate about. So really happy to be here. And thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Have a great day. Today's episode is brought to you by Grin, the all-in-one influencer relationship management platform. Grow an authentic direct-to-consumer brand on Shopify with the number one influencer marketing software solution for creating genuine, direct relationships with influencers. You can learn more about their incredible solution and get started today at grin.co. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you, a loyal listener of eCommerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, launch, grow, and scale with Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.